Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
It's 12:03 on Friday afternoon, December 27th. Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us. I'm Rob Hart. Coming up next, we'll look at what the Bears need in their next head coach. But first, make 2025 the year of the big family goal. Whether it's a dream vacation, a boat, or a backyard pool, everyone can contribute. Teamwork turns financial dreams into reality. Joining us on the Village of Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home, is Ed Jurtzen, certified financial planner, founder of the Engage Wealth Group in Chicago, and past national president of the Financial Planning Association. Find him online, engagewealthgroup.com. Ed, thank you for joining us today. And I love this segment. I love the idea of this segment because this really does speak to me and where my kids are in their life. And that is, the older they get, the more curiosity they have about what adults are doing. And they want to know about cooking. They want to know about the decision-making process to move the household along. So working towards a family financial goal allows your kids to exercise that curiosity.
Rob, this is such a great topic, and it's so important because we work with generations of clients, right? Grandparents, their kids, and then their grandkids. And I can tell you, if you pass along these pearls of wisdom, right, personal finance 101, it has this compounding effect as you go along their line. And most importantly, to your point, if you make it less of a secret and more of a family endeavor in regards to, hey, this is income, these are expenses, and you start working your way through your kids, what a great way to really set them up for future financial success by really allowing them to participate in these big decisions.
And these goals are something fun. It's not the financial equivalent of sit down and eat your vegetables, kid. It's working towards a vacation, maybe working towards a swimming pool, working towards something fun that the family can enjoy, and then you learn about budgeting and sacrifice along the way.
Exactly. But it's not one without the other, Rob. I mean, again, if you're saving money for a vacation, well, how do we all do that? How do we all contribute? Maybe kids have an allowance, or maybe they even have a part-time job. They can contribute in some small way to that overall plan. Like you said, make this a fun endeavor, not, well, you have to save because of this, 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 and this. That's not fun. You don't want to be restrictive. Be creative. And again, find ways to really incentivize your kids to understand the process of saving and investing and setting up goals. And again, it sets them up tremendously for future success.
And actually, I want to strike one of my previous words from the record, Ed, if you don't mind. I said sacrifice as part of the budgeting process. It doesn't necessarily have to be a sacrifice. You can pass on maybe the more expensive thing and go for a lower priced item as part of going towards this goal. But once again, this is a fun exercise, a fun activity. And just because you are buying the store brand version of something doesn't mean you're giving up in order to accomplish this goal.
Exactly. And with this generation of kids, right, convenience is a big thing, right? Streaming and all these different elements that generations ago we weren't struck with these expenses, if you would. So again, having a keen eye towards where your money is going is great, because for the vast majority of the people, the income pie is only so big. And with the spending plan, we know where that money's going. So again, have your kids and have the family part of that all overall element, because again, they're opening their eyes to, like, there is not just unlimited funds, but most importantly, you're starting that framework of, here's a goal and here's how we get that goal. Again, a great way to do it from a family side, and again, from your side, make it fun and make it a great new year.
Ed Jurtzen, certified financial planner, founder of the Engage Wealth Group in Chicago. Find him online, engagewealthgroup.com. Thank you for joining us today. Coming up, a look at the Bears and the qualities they seek in a new head coach.
Discussing the news affecting your money, the WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
The Chicago Bears are set to find their next head coach, aiming to select the right leader to build around quarterback Caleb Williams and to avoid squandering this pivotal opportunity for the future of the franchise. We welcome and Mark Gannis, president and co-founder, Sports Corp. Limited in Chicago. Mark, thank you for joining us once again. And I want to go back to 30 years ago, and I remember watching David Letterman back in the days when the New York Mets and the New York Jets were national punchlines. And I thought to myself, at least we're not them. And now it seems like the Chicago Bears have turned into this national punchline. Even the commentary that you see on ESPN, the commentary you heard on the Amazon broadcast last night, all very cynical, all suggesting that the fans of Chicago deserve better than what they are getting. And that seems to be, those are the stakes of this head coach search for the Bears in the offseason.
So are you suggesting the Chicago Bears have become the bad news Bears?
They certainly have become the bad news Bears.
Your point about the fans is absolutely right. The stadium was filled. It was raining. People were stayed till the end of the game. The fans are the ones who have been shortchanged here. And I think everybody in the Bears organization would agree with that. Now, what you have now is a generational decision that is going to be made by Ryan Poles and by Kevin Warren. They have their quarterback. Caleb Williams is an excellent quarterback. He just has had not very good coaching. What he needs is a great coach, two coaches, actually. He needs a quarterback's coach as well as a head coach and an offensive coordinator, three, that can get the most out of this guy. He is really that good, but we haven't been able to see it this year because of the coaching situation. If they get this wrong, it will screw up the Bears for at least the next decade. If they get this right, we may get back to 1985 pleasures in Chicago football during the season.
I look at the Kansas City Chiefs. They have that talent in Patrick Mahomes. They have a coach in Andy Reid. They have players. They have personnel. And this is before the entire organization got pulled into the bright, shining light of Taylor Swift's celebrity. But just look at the impact the Chiefs doing well has on the entire Kansas City metropolitan area. The quality of celebrities and players who now show up and do local charity appearances for hospitals and things like that. What would let's fantasize about the impact on Chicago, not only on the Bears, but the economy and on local institutions if the Bears manage to get this right?
Rob, there is nothing that would have as much impact on the psyche of Chicagoans than the Bears being Super Bowl champs, Super Bowl contenders again. Last night during the broadcast, Al Michaels asked, well, is Chicago a Cubs town or a Bears town? With all due respect to my friends who own the Cubs and the White Sox and the Bulls and the Blackhawks, Chicago is a Bears town. If the Bears win, it matters more than if any of those other teams win championships. It has tremendous impact on so much, it's hard to even measure. Now, remember, the way the Kansas City Chiefs got there was when they plucked Andy Reid from as a head coach. He was the head coach of the Philadelphia Eagles, had some success, but didn't get them over the top. The Eagles moved on, and that's when the Kansas City Chiefs picked him up, changed the entire dynamic and fortune for the franchise. That's how important this one decision is.
Let's look at the entire Chicago sports landscape. You have the Bears in a pivotal coaching search. You have the White Sox trying to lift themselves up off the mat after the worst winning percentage of all time last season. The Cubs are always stuck in 83-84 win mode. The Blackhawks are in another rebuild. And the Bulls blew 50 points, gave up 50 points in the fourth quarter in Atlanta yesterday. Is it fair to say, with all of these misfortunes taking place, that Chicago is still a sports town?
Yeah, Chicago is still a sports town. It's a big sports town. We're just in a real deep nadir right now as far as our professional sports teams are concerned. I mean, even the Chicago Sky didn't go too far, and they got a lot of attention this year. This is just a bad time, which means it's a great opportunity for one or more of the teams to break out of the pack. But Chicago is a massive sports town. We eat, breathe, drink sports in Chicago. And, we just haven't been given the best product by our professional teams.
Mark Gannis, president, co-founder, Sports Corp Limited in Chicago. Thank you for joining us today. Coming up next, credit card debt is rising. We'll get some advice on how you can manage some big bills in the new year.
Information to make cash and save cash. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Credit card debt is set to hit record levels, meaning many will face big credit card bills in the new year. Joining us with some advice on how to handle it all is Ted Rossman, senior industry analyst, Bankrate.com, based in New York. Ted, thank you for joining us today. And the December billing cycle ended just a couple of days ago, which means you have about a month to figure out how you're going to pay off your December credit card bill with all of the expenses and gifts and nights out associated with the Christmas holiday. And you got to come up with a strategy for paying that bill. Otherwise, you face double-digit interest rates.
Right. The average credit card charges about 20%. So we definitely want to prioritize this payoff. My favorite tip is to move your high cost debt over to a new card that won't charge interest for up to 21 months. There are 0% balance transfer cards out there like the Wells Fargo Reflect and the Citi Simplicity that give you nearly 2 years interest free. That's a huge tailwind for your debt payoff efforts.
And then in general, I mean, everybody likes to make New Year's resolutions as we approach January 1st. And I'm sure the most common one is losing weight. The other one is to maybe get a new job in the new year. Where does pay down debt fall on the list of the most common New Year's resolutions?
It's towards the top of the list. I mean, especially if you're somebody with credit card debt, that's one to prioritize because the rates are so much higher than other forms of debt. It reminds me of that industry saying about how credit cards can be like power tools, as in really useful or dangerous depending on how you use them. Half of credit card holders pay in full every month, and for them, life is great. They avoid interest. They take full advantage of rewards and buyer protections. If you're in the half with credit card debt, though, the average interest rate's about 20%. The average balance is about $6,400, according to TransUnion. I mean, if you only make minimum payments in that scenario, you're going to be in debt for 18 years. You're going to owe more than $9,000 in interest. That's where we really want to prioritize debt payoff. You know, maybe it's a 0% balance transfer card. Maybe it's nonprofit credit counseling. Maybe it's a side hustle or cutting your expenses. Whatever you need to do to bring that balance down.
And as you point out, a 0% balance transfer credit card, maybe one that does provide 0% interest for 2 years and can give you a leg up in your efforts to pay down that debt. The one thing you have to do is just use it to pay down the debt. Don't use it to accrue more of it.
Exactly. Don't dig the hole any deeper. Maybe consider freezing your balance where it's at. Shift your spending over to cash or debit while you really attack that credit card debt. You know, I mentioned that average balance of around $6,400. That sounds like a lot, and it is, but, you know, divide that by the 21 months that you can get from some of these cards interest-free, and then you're talking about $300 a month. That sounds a lot more achievable, and the fact that you're avoiding interest during that time frame means that your debt's not growing. Once the term ends, the rate goes way up, but do whatever you can to pay it off within the allotted time.
And on top of that, just $300 a month to knock down that $6,400 balance. Let's talk about what your life is like on the other side. Once you have finally paid down that credit card debt, how does that change your monthly balance sheet?
Well, then credit cards are working for you because then whatever you spend, you can get rewards. You can take full advantage of that. I mean, it doesn't make sense to pay 20% interest to get 1 or 2 or even 5 or 6% in cash back or airline miles. But if you're not paying interest, well, then all of a sudden that can add up in a good way and you can get rewards. And you know, it's hard to build wealth when you're paying the credit card company 20% interest month over month. I mean, another way to think about this is whenever you're paying down credit card debt, you're basically getting a guaranteed tax-free return of whatever your interest rate is. And it's often 20% or more. I mean, some store credit cards are north of 30%. We really want to prioritize debt payoff in the new year.
Ted Rossman, senior industry analyst, Bankrate.com in New York. Thank you for joining us today. Still ahead, an entrepreneur turned culinary business owner gives back through mentorship to her community.
This is Chicago's news, traffic, and weather station, News Radio 105.9. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon. I'm Rob Hart. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM. A 17-year-old is facing charges after a 2-year-old boy was shot and critically injured on the West Side. Severe weather around the country puts a damper on holiday travel. We'll meet a South Side entrepreneur who left gang life behind and opened her own culinary business. Market indicators suggest struggles could lie ahead for stocks as President-elect Trump prepares to take office. WBBM Business, the markets are lower. The Dow is down 466 points. The NASDAQ is down 385. The S&P 500 is down 87. We have 48 degrees right now in Chicago with light rain. Going up to a cloudy 50 today. It's 12:31. Topping our news at the half hour. A 17-year-old boy has now been charged in the shooting of a 2-year-old boy on the West Side yesterday. The teenager is facing charges of obstructing justice, destroying evidence, and causing a child to be endangered. Chicago police say the toddler was inside a home near 38th and West 14th Street when someone opened fire shortly after 4 p.m. He suffered multiple gunshot wounds and was hospitalized in critical condition. The year will end with some rough weather across much of the nation, and that will affect holiday travel.
A clash of cold and warm air will lead to a significant threat of severe weather, including tornadoes over the weekend. Nasty storms are expected Saturday across the mid and deep south. The National Weather Service already has a 3 out of 5 risk for severe weather tomorrow. Parts of Georgia, the Carolinas, and Virginia could see strong storms, including tornadoes, on Sunday. Jim Crisula, CBS News.
It's 12:32 as the Noon Business Hour continues. Markets are lower today. Joining us on the Village of Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home, is Michael Palumbo, founder of MJP Capital, author of the book Calculated Risk in Chicago. Michael, thank you for joining us today. And tech stocks, they probably earned the Lead Balloon Award for today. They're weighing down the financial markets.
Good afternoon, Rob, and thanks for having me on. Last time I was on the show was right before the Fed announced on December 18th, and when they cut rates a quarter, that should have been great for the market, right? Well, the problem is that Chairman Powell also signaled that was going to be about it. Maybe they would cut once or twice more, but they were pretty much towards the end of the rate cuts. And so I really believe that, and I'd warned investors on your show last time, that we were tapping out, at least short term, in the market, and now that Chairman Powell has kind of indicated that the cuts are ending, it gave the market a good reason to sell off, and that was pretty much the top around 60-50 in the S&P, and we've gone lower now since then in the last couple weeks, and as you said, tech stocks are leading the sell off because, you know, rates have gone higher, in the long bond because, you know, the Fed has indicated they're pretty much done. So, you know, expect next year to be not necessarily a tough year for tech stocks, but it will not be just straight up 30%, 40%, something like that. They're going to have to really post great earnings. They're going to have to beat what the market expects, or they're going to sell off some more. It's going to be a tougher year next year for stocks. That's why we've cautioned investors, and we've said this, to have some cash on hand. The only stocks that I have bought in the last month have been very boring names like Target. I love Target. I love Delta Airlines. I love JP Morgan. Stocks that'll do well with a normalized economy and a normalized rate curve, which is what's happening. So let's see what happens next year. I think the S&P can still get a 5 to 10% gain, but we're not going to have a year like this year. So, and just be thankful if you're long that you got this year, because they don't happen very often.
Let's talk about the bond market, because I think that that explains a lot. And in mid-September, before the Fed announced that half a percentage point rate cut, the 10-year Treasury was at 3.6%. Today, it's at 4.6%. So the bond yield giveth, but the Fed taketh away as far as the cost of money is concerned. And what are some of the factors driving this run-up on the bond market? I mean, obviously, there's some concerns about inflation going forward. But at the same time, the Fed is also unspooling its balance sheet, so these bond auctions are taking place.
Yeah, so the Fed is notoriously, you know, they're able to control the short end of the curve. I mean, they could control the long end if they want to do, but they really focus on the short end of the curve. So you're looking at the, you know, 3-year, 6, 3 month, 6 month, 1 year T-bills and short-term bonds. The long end of the curve is generally controlled by inflationary expectations. So, you know, those still exist. So the 10-year and the 30 have actually, the rates have gone up. And that's why, again, we've sold off, because the Fed has said they're going to stop lowering rates, which could kick up inflation a bit. It could spur the economy a bit. But in reality, that has caused rates to go up in the long term. So stocks don't always do well when their numbers are good. In other words, their earnings are good, because the bond market senses it out and yields go up. And that's what we're seeing right here. So next year, again, I think we'll get a little bit of a positive year. It's just not going to be like last year where we gained, you know, over 20%. I don't expect that to happen. I just think we'll eke out a small gain.
Michael Palumbo, founder of MJP Capital, author of the book Calculated Risk, based in Chicago. Thank you for joining us today. Coming up next in Entrepreneur Friday, we'll talk to a former gang member who changed her life through the culinary business, who now mentors at-risk youth.
Compounding your interest with an economy of words. This is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
Hey, it's Entrepreneur Friday on the Noon Business Hour, and today we check back in with a Southside entrepreneur who left gang life behind, opened her own culinary business, and is now giving back to the community through mentorship. We welcome in Lakeisha Hunter, founder and CEO of Rise Above the Ordinary Youth Mentorship and owner of That Jerk Spot Catering Business and Food Truck, based in Chicago. Lakeisha, thank you for joining us today, because the last time we spoke, it was one of my favorite Noon Business Hour segments of all time, because I think you have a very compelling story and you have a very compelling lesson to offer to people. So let's kind of reset and just tell us your story a little bit. I mean, you were in a gang, you were a gang leader, and then you left that life. Your escape hatch was through the kitchen. And just kind of talk about how you were lured away from that gang life, and then began, you opened your own chain of food trucks, and now you want to pay that forward.
Yes, thank you, Rob. It's so great to be back, and you hit it right on the head. Yes, I was born and raised here in Chicago, and raised by drug-addicted parents, and eventually was taken away by DCFS, Department of Children and Family Services, where me and my siblings were separated and became wards of the state, forcing us to move with my grandmother in Inglewood, where I joined my gang. And I joined the gang for protection, but it wasn't until high school when my culinary teacher challenged me to do something different, to stay in culinary or choose my gang that I was in. You know, I was, so I shared with you before, Chicago Tribune listed me as one of the worst young female gang leaders in Inglewood, and thought that I wouldn't live to see past 18. So culinary has been my way out. And now I'm pushing it forward. I'm helping those that are in underserved communities strive to do better than what is projected on them.
And I think I brought this up in our last conversation, but I just keep thinking about that passage from the Anthony Bourdain Kitchen Confidential, talking about people who work in kitchens, and that you have people who come from various backgrounds, and they may have backgrounds similar to you. They may have run with a gang. They may have led a gang. They may have been in prison. But you're in the kitchen, and you're there to do a job, and nobody really passes any judgment on how you got there. But if you can do the job, that can be a transformative experience for you.
Absolutely. And this is what's so great about the industry that I love so much and has been a part of for the last 32 years of my life. It's judgment free. And then it is the most successful industry and job that you can get when you're reentering society, even with a background. So at some jobs, you cannot get at some places, you cannot be hired with a background. But fortunately, you can own your own business. You can get an EIN and an LLC and start your own business in culinary. That's what's so spectacular about this industry.
Now, as you mentor people, because I think the story I hear from a lot of people who were in gangs was that it provided a family, and they may not have had a family growing up. It provided status. It provided protection. It made you an important person. And how can you pull people away from that and saying there are other ways you can live your life and receive all of those forms of validation?
Ways of doing that is the end result. The end result is the only thing that I can think of at the moment to push others who were like myself, who did receive family in my gang, who did receive support and protection, which was the main reason I stayed in my gang so long. But the end result is different. The end result is broader than those that are staying in the gang. It's either jail or the grave. For most, and I've seen most of my peers go to the grave and go to jail. Now, I chose to choose a different path, which now I'm 46 years old and wasn't expected to live to see 18. So that is my reason and the push for pulling out those who are subjected to gang.
Your mentorship program is called Rise Above the Ordinary. That is also the name of your book, Rise Above the Ordinary, The Life Behind Your Smile. What was it like writing that book and producing and really mining all of your memories to tell your story?
Yeah, this story is very transparent. I left everything on the table, and it was really as I was writing, it was really transforming my thoughts, and I was being healed from things of past, things that pushed me to the street, things that would push me into depression. I was a young lady with a child with a learning disability. I wasn't able to read or write until I was 8 years old. I didn't go to school because my parents were addicted to drugs. I had to stay home and take care of my family, my younger sisters and brothers. So writing that and helping others to sharing with others that I know where you've been and I can relate, but there's a better end if you keep pushing and allowing your past to push out your purpose. And that's what Rise Above the Ordinary, The Life Behind Her Smile is about, to encourage you to push past your past.
Lakeisha Hunter, founder and CEO of Rise Above the Ordinary Youth Mentorship and owner of That Jerk Spot Catering Business and Food Truck in Chicago, author of the book Rise Above the Ordinary, The Life Behind Her Smile. Thank you for joining us today.
It's 60 Minutes of Financial Planning. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
There's a lot of optimism for stocks as President-elect Trump prepares to take office in January for a second non-consecutive term. However, market indicators suggest struggles could lie ahead, and maintaining the so-called Trump trade could be a challenge for financial markets. Joining us to explain is Mark Hulbert, investment columnist for the Wall Street Journal, Barron's, and MarketWatch.com, based in Washington. Mark, thank you for joining us today. And this is a follow-up of sorts to a pre-election segment we had about how if you are investing, there's money's not blue, money's not red, money is green. So leave your politics at the door. And that seems to apply to trying to make some money investing off of the incoming Trump administration.
Well, that's right. The investors seemingly are captured by narratives which work for a while, and then all of a sudden the narrative stops, and then it doesn't. And it's interesting, a lot of stocks right now are no higher than they were on the day before election in early November. So despite the quote-unquote Trump trade, a lot of stocks have not done that well, and it really reinforces the point you there make in the question. The other thing that we have to remember is that there's something about the human psyche that during the campaign season, we believe all the promises that are made by both candidates. This is not a comment that's either directed at Trump or at Kamala Harris had she won. It's really a point that the promises cannot possibly all be fulfilled, and we all know it, and yet we somehow willingly believe it. And so that kind of optimism and willing disbelief does sort of lead stocks to do well, but then reality sets in, and I think we're seeing that as we look to see, really, can we balance the budget and do all the things that we say that we're going to do and reduce taxes and so forth? It's just not going to add up.
Well, the question I always have about trying to invest based on current events is how far into the weeds do you get when it comes to policy, when it comes to the makeup of Congress, when it comes to the polls you assess before the election? Because because it seems like when the futures markets popped, when it looked like Donald Trump was going to win back in November, it seems like a lot of investors and a lot of voters, too, thought that we were just going to basically rerun 2017 and that it was going to be a tax cut, low inflation, not much in the way of inflationary pressures going forward. But 2025 is not 2017. So how far into the weeds of data do you get to arrive at that conclusion?
That's such a good question, because it turns out that if something is already known, then we should assume that prices in the stock market already reflect that which is known. So when we try to get into the weeds or not get into the weeds, we have to somehow convince ourselves that we know something, or at least have analyzed something and interpreted it correctly in a way that few, if any, other investors have done. And only then will you be able to make money as the rest of the world discovers what you alone have figured out. Of course, that's a very tall order, because most of the time, by the time we have read about it or heard it on the radio or so forth, a lot of other people have already known about it as well and invested accordingly. And so it makes it just so difficult to try to actually outsmart the market.
Mark Hulbert, investment columnist for The Wall Street Journal, Barron's, and MarketWatch.com, based in Washington, D.C. If you missed any part of the Noon Business Hour, we'll have the replay podcast available shortly at WBBMNewsRadio.com and the Odyssey app.